From the American College of Cardiology, this is Dr. Kim Eagle, ACC.org Editor-in-Chief, with this week's Eagle's Eye View. This is your weekly cardiovascular update from ACC.org. This week I've chosen two articles that I think are interesting and potentially relevant to our practices. As you know, the editorial team at ACC.org, we review the top articles every week coming out in the medical literature and select those that are most important. And then the podcast, I select articles that I think are particularly relevant to the practice of cardiovascular medicine. So we're going to look at an article published this past week in the New England Journal of Medicine looking at clinic versus ambulatory blood pressure measurements and how those relate to mortality. And then another article that was published just this past week in JAMA looking at various antiplatelet therapy combinations for trying to prevent saphenous vein graft occlusion in patients having coronary bypass surgery. So the first article by Benegas et al. In the New England Journal looked at the relationship between clinic and ambulatory blood pressure measurements and mortality. This is an important study for a couple of reasons. First, it's very large. The authors analyzed data from a registry-based multi-center national cohort in Spain that recruited nearly 64,000 patients between 2004 and 2014. And both clinic and 24-hour ambulatory blood pressure monitors were evaluated, and the patients were divided into several categories. Sustained hypertension, that is, they had higher blood pressure both in the clinic and in 24-hour recordings. White coat, where the clinic BP was elevated, but they had a normal ambulatory blood pressure monitor calculation. Masked hypertension, these are people that were, quote, normal in clinic and had an elevated 24-hour ambulatory blood pressure monitor, or normotensive, they were normal in both settings. And the investigators did an excellent job with analysis using a Cox regression model to look at the relative hazards for clinic blood pressure elevation, ambulatory monitoring blood pressure elevation, or masked hypertension. So first, a couple of notes about the cohort. 58% were male. The mean age was 57 in those who were alive and 67 in those who died. The median follow-up was at about 5 years, which is excellent. These people generally had hypertension. Most of them, the mean clinic BP was 149/87. The mean daytime reading was in ambulatory monitoring 132/80. The mean 24-hour ambulatory BP was 129/77. If you look at the various phenotypes that were pre-specified, 6.6% had normotension. White coat hypertension was seen in about 28%. Masked hypertension was seen in about 8%. And sustained hypertension in about 47%. Overall, there were 3,808 deaths, including about a third who died of cardiovascular causes. Now, when the investigators look at modeling, where they included both the 24-hour blood pressure average and clinic measurement, the 24-hour systolic blood pressure was more strongly associated with all-cause mortality at a hazard rate of about 1.6 than the clinic systolic blood pressure. So that was very important, and that was done after adjustment. So this was very useful. Also, nighttime ambulatory systolic blood pressure had a hazard rate of 1.54 compared to daytime ambulatory systolic pressure. This is an example of the lack of nighttime dipping. And that 8% of patients who had masked hypertension, these individuals had a hazard ratio for all-cause mortality of about 2.8, which was far greater than, say, white coat hypertension, where the hazard ratio was about 1.8. So a couple of really important take-home points here. First, this article, perhaps better than any before it, both because of its size and how comprehensive it was, shows that ambulatory blood pressure measurements were a stronger predictor of all-cause and cardiovascular mortality than clinic blood pressure measurements. White coat hypertension was not benign. It had a hazard ratio in the range of 1.5 to 1.6. And really importantly, masked hypertension, people that appeared to be normal in the office but were high on ambulatory reading, they had a hazard ratio that was really quite high, 2.8, indicating that this is a high-risk group. So the perspective on this study is that previous efforts to understand the relative risk predicted by ambulatory blood pressure readings versus clinic have generally been pretty small in terms of the overall cohort size. And so this one, I think, is particularly helpful in that the size of the study really provides, I think, some robust parameters to estimate risk. And certainly in patients who appear to have borderline blood pressures in the clinic, we certainly want to be screening them either with their own home readings obtained or ambulatory blood pressure monitoring itself. And this paper is probably going to change the guidelines in terms of the overall recommendations for how we use ambulatory blood pressure monitoring. So an important study on hypertension. The second article I wanted to mention today is a paper that came out in JAMA this week by Zhao et al. And it was a comparison, a randomized trial, looking at ticagrelor plus aspirin versus ticagrelor alone versus aspirin alone for saphenous vein graft patency a year after CABG. It was a randomized trial, and it was performed in six tertiary hospitals in China. The endpoint of interest was whether or not a saphenous vein graft had occluded by 1 year as measured either by coronary angiography or CT angiography. There were 500 patients randomized, and the trial was 1:1:1, with one group getting dual antiplatelets, that's ticagrelor 90 milligrams twice a day plus aspirin 100 milligrams a day. Second group, ticagrelor 90 milligrams twice a day. Third group, aspirin 100 milligrams a day. So about 166 patients in each group. But since most of the patients had multiple vein grafts, the number of vein grafts available for analysis in each cohort was in the range of about 500 vein grafts. So the saphenous vein graft patency at a year after CABG was better in the group that got both ticagrelor and aspirin, 88.7%, versus 82.8% with ticagrelor alone, versus 76.5% with aspirin alone. The difference between the dual antiplatelet group versus aspirin alone was statistically meaningful. The difference between ticagrelor and aspirin was not. There were more bleeding episodes in the patients who got ticagrelor. So this study certainly allows a perspective that dual antiplatelet therapy may be more effective than single antiplatelet therapy in people who get a CABG. You may remember from the CURE trial that the group that went on to have CABG in that trial did get added benefit of aspirin and clopidogrel. That was, as I recall, more of an ACS trial. This paper was patients having elective CABG. And it certainly calls to mind this conundrum that we're in of wanting to preserve graft patency with more effective antiplatelets, yet at the same time reduce risk of bleeding, particularly after a major thoracic operation like a CABG. And also continuing the debate is whether or not genetic testing for sensitivity to these medications will allow further precision in terms of estimating which patients should get dual antiplatelet therapy and which agents should we use. The trial is relatively underpowered, but I do think it harkens to this need for larger studies of patients having revascularization to find the optimal treatment with antiplatelet therapy in patients both with stable and those with unstable CAD. So this has been Eagle's Eye View, your weekly cardiovascular update from ACC.org. You'll be able to find these studies online at ACC.org. There are a host of other resources available to you on ACC.org. Also, you can access this information wherever you get your podcasts. So until next week, I hope you have a good one. Thank you.